This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Eastern Bank. We're here, you're first.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Future investments versus today's fiscal realities. That was the theme emerging from Governor Maggie Hassan's budget presented yesterday. With the recession over, Hassan said, it's time to address some key agenda items that should no longer be set aside.
We must be frugal. That is who we are as Granite Staters. But we should not be penny wise and pound foolish.
Hassan listed a number of priorities she said would keep the state moving forward, including more money for Medicaid, education, commuter rail, and mental health. Republicans agreed with some of those priorities, especially education, but House Finance Committee Chair Neil Kirk said, in general, Hassan's budget was business as usual.
We still have the same proportion of spending on health and human services and on the other agencies. And what I think we need to do, and the governor did not do this, was to redirect our resources from health and human services to infrastructure, education, and economic growth.
While the budget contains no major new revenue source like casinos, it does include several smaller pots of money, such as a cigarette tax increase. Most of these, however, will be a hard sell with the Republican legislature. And so that's a big outstanding question, says Steve Norton with the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies.
There's $50 million in new revenues that are likely no non-starters in the House. And so how is the House going to make its prioritization of spending?
It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you, your questions and comments, especially as we focus on Governor Hassan's budget, her priorities, what may happen to them in the legislature. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests with us. Jeff Feingold is here, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Laura.
Also with us, Dean Spiliota, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Josh Rogers, senior political reporter for us here at NHPR. And Josh, thanks for taking time out.
Oh, you're welcome, Laura.
Well, and Josh, I want to start with you. Overall, your thoughts from this budget?
Well, according to the governor, this is a tight budget that reflects difficult choices. It projects 6.4% growth biennium to biennium. And, you know, it funds things that we expected the governor to prioritize in some degree, a little bit of money towards rail, money to keep Medicaid expansion going, and money to make good on the commitments that came out of the settlements of lawsuits over the Medicaid enhancement tax and also over mental health services. And, you know, somewhat traditional methods of scrambling around to find the cash to pay for them, the tobacco tax, which is something that governors have been comfortable raising. This puts us right up against Maine to the northern border, just 1 cent difference, still substantially lower than Massachusetts. And Keno, which we'll see where that goes, and you know, auto registration fees, which were a vexing issue for Governor Lynch when he got that through, but then Republicans got rid of it, and so there's going to be a tug on the revenue front.
Definitely, we'll talk about that in a moment. So we'll sort of talk about some of the spending priorities that she talked about, and then for sure go into how she intends to pay for some of those priorities. Jeff Feingold, your broad thoughts on this budget?
Well, I hate to use this word, but I'm going to. I think it's pretty conservative budget in the old sense of the word. As Representative Kirk had said, there's like really no gimmicks in this budget, which we've seen for many, many years in a New Hampshire budget. And as Josh said, whether these revenue ideas pass the House or get through the House or not, and the priorities themselves, it remains to be seen. But the thing is that it's not it's a budget that's kind of out there. It's not guessing too much on expansion of the economy, on what the revenues are going to bring in from the other taxes, and it's not like a lot of the budgets we've had before, where you know we've fooled around with Medicaid money and all those other things. So there are no gimmicks like that. It's an interesting thing to see because it's on one end, it's not something that Republicans can criticize as a document itself. They can obviously criticize the priorities and things like that.
Well, since you use the word gimmick, Governor Hassan herself used that word in her budget address yesterday. Let's hear how the governor describes her budget.
It is a budget that continues rethinking and reshaping how state government works to make us more effective and efficient and to stretch our citizens' tax dollars as far as possible. It is a budget that is honest about how we will use our limited resources, beginning to move away from misleading budgeting gimmicks.
So there's that word, budgeting gimmicks. Dean Spiliotis, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, the governor had this preamble in the speech where she talked about kind of the changing demographics and the changing economy in New Hampshire and the need to figure out how to keep more young people in the state. And, you know, as I was sitting there listening to it in my car, thinking, well, you wouldn't think we're just coming out of a recession. It was this very sort of
sober,
you know, we're not what we used to be as a state and we have to adjust accordingly to kind of get the economy running again. You know, for me, I look at it in the context of the political context, which is a Republican-controlled state legislature. Real basic disagreements between the governor and Republicans in the legislature over whether or not we have, quote, a spending problem or a revenue problem. And I think that's going to be the context in which you have to view this. You know, the budget has a reasonable increase in spending, about an additional $700 million over the last budget, from $10.8 billion up to $11.5 billion. And real differences in revenue projections. I think the governor's revenue projections for the next biennium versus the House Ways and Means Republicans differ by about $230 million. So some real basic differences about how much money there's going to be to spend, whether or not we have a spending or a revenue problem. And I'm looking at the different revenue sources she comes up with. You know, some of those are going to be very difficult to get through the state legislature. So, yeah, it's a conservative budget. But the political context, I think there's going to be some real debate over revenue sources, the nature of spending, particularly we've mentioned health and human services. And then finally, this issue of Medicaid expansion, which is a big one.
Big issue.
Yeah, and the $4 million for rail, that might very well drop by the wayside. I don't know.
Jeff, I can see you want to jump in, and then I have a question for you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that as opposed to her first budget, which we remember she played it all out. She said based everything on this casino gambling idea. And that was – the whole thing was based on it, and that just – basically made that first budget she came up with a non-starter, and it was really not. It was an entertaining session to watch when they came up with their solutions for how to address the budget. But you know, the casino came and didn't go through. This time she's not doing that. She has this idea for Keno, which you know is, you know, wherever that goes, we don't know. But the point is that there's these. One of the things it does that I see, we've put off a lot of actions we've had to take over the years. And the first one I could think of is, you know, we've had those two lawsuits that she has the money in to settle that. Those are priorities that need to be addressed. We've been putting them off as a state, as the legislature and previous governor has put these things off. And these are things that are like on the table. You just can't get it. They're the elephant in the room, and
well,
she has to do that.
That's an important point. And that's a point you made yesterday, Josh, in our own coverage, that you know much of this budget is already spoken for because of these lawsuits that Jeff mentioned.
I mean, at least big chunks of money are spoken for, and you know it is interesting within the political context. You know, this is a statement of the state's priorities and so forth. But, you know, this is also we're looking towards 2016. What is Governor Hassan going to do? Will she be running for reelection? Will she be running for U.S. Senate? Republicans are perhaps less inclined to be cooperative and act in a way where kind of everyone can congratulate themselves for being bipartisan than in the last go round. And so I think that part of this budget strategy on the part of Governor Hassan is to say, here's my idea. It doesn't contain any, you know, wildly – it may contain some revenue increases, but it doesn't contain anything that's wildly speculative. you know, let's see what you guys come up with. And I'm going to say this budget is clean and doesn't have gimmicks, no back of the budget cuts. And, you know, let's see if you guys can meet that as well.
Well, and Josh, that brings up something I wanted to ask you. You know, several times the governor said, this isn't all that we want to do, but this is what we can afford to do right now. I mean, she said that at least twice, maybe three times.
Well,
so who's she talking to there?
Well, I mean, I think she's, you know, talking to her own party to some degree, and also just being a realist. There isn't an appetite to raise big bolts of revenue. And it's also true that if you look at the cost structure of the budget, it was, you know, we went through a recession. We had the budget that went through when Republicans were in control of the legislature that dropped the cost structure of the budget substantially. And so in you know, terms adjusted for inflation, the spending here, she made the point, I didn't expect her to name drop Governor Benson in the budget address yesterday, but she mentioned, you know, on education funding, for instance, you know, we're spending less than was being spent then. And, you know, her people are also saying to reporters, look, you know, we're spending 2008, 2009 levels in general. So that's a context for that as well.
Well, and one of you mentioned Keno. And I think one of the ideas that we were all looking at, waiting for yesterday was, is she going to do casinos again? Somebody on our crew called Keno Casino Light. So no big casinos, but some Keno. Let's hear what Governor Hassan said about Keno yesterday.
Another measure to ensure that we can invest in our shared priorities is to allow the operation of Keno and self-service lottery terminals in certain establishments with licensing enforced by the Lottery Commission. Six of the 10 most lucrative Keno locations in Massachusetts are located within 5 miles of the New Hampshire border. Allowing Keno and self-service lottery terminals would help bring that revenue back home to invest in our priorities.
So, Dean Spiliotis, no waiting in line at the convenience store for that lottery ticket. Self-service.
Yes, and if you try to buy a Powerball ticket for the $500 million drawing on Wednesday, you can see these lines get pretty long. You know, the Keno, she said, would bring in $26 million as opposed to $80 million was the figure for the casino gambling. And if you think about, you know, some of the other economic arguments around casino gambling where people coming to actually visit the state and staying in hotels and restaurants and whatnot, you know, Keno is something you can kind of do in a bar or in other places that have those TV screens, and you fill out a sheet, and it basically draws numbers. Like a lottery. So, you know, gambling is one of those issues, as we know, that sort of doesn't cleanly cut along party lines. So we'll have to see what happens. There'll probably be some pushback. But what's so interesting is if you remember in the last budget cycle, they didn't want Keno because they thought it was going to get in the way of the bigger fish, which was the casino gambling. So they kind of I think it was Lou D'Alessandro not wanting it because he thought it was going to cloud the casino issue. Now that's all they really have on the table.
All right. Well, coming up on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, more on how the governor hopes to pay for some of her initiatives. We'll also talk about the big issue, as one of you mentioned, Medicaid expansion. All that's coming up on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Stay with us. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're looking mostly at the governor's budget, although later on in the hour, we'll wrap up a couple other news stories from the week. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, give us a call. Your thoughts, questions, comments about some of the priorities Governor Hassan presented yesterday, some of the ways she hopes to pay for them. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Jeff Feingold with New Hampshire Business Review, Josh Rogers, senior political reporter for NHPR, and Dean Spiliotis, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And gentlemen, let's talk about education because that was a big part of this budget. Higher education has been hoping to get more money in the Granite State. Higher education officials yesterday were not disappointed.
What I hear more than anything else from our businesses, both big and small, is the need for an even stronger workforce pipeline. That's why this budget builds on the important steps we've taken to begin holding down the cost of higher education, increasing funding over the biennium by $13 million at the university system and by $6.5 million at our community colleges compared to fiscal year 2015.
Again, Governor Haslam presenting her priorities for higher education in the state. What do you think, Josh? Was it what higher education officials here in New Hampshire wanted?
Well, certainly USNH wanted more money than $13 million, and they had, you know, been maneuvering to get as much money as they could to get the money sufficient to, in their estimation, be able to freeze tuition. This falls short of that substantially. Community colleges have said they would freeze tuition, and you know, I thought some of the things she said about primary and secondary education was interesting as well, that she waded into school funding a bit and talked about lifting the cap on adequacy. Their bills pending. Her proposal is a little bit different. You know, this does not fund full-day kindergarten, which is something she wanted to do. It did include $19 million for charter schools, which is something that was something that Republicans pointed to, saying they did like about her spending.
Yeah, when we talked to Neil Kirk yesterday, he said he did like about that. I'd like your thoughts too, Jeff Feingold, on the K through 12 portion.
Yeah, it was interesting because it's one of the things that's not in it is the building aid, which a lot of the cities and towns, the school districts wanted, and also actually, to be honest, the construction industry would like to see reinstated because it's something where the state would guarantee a certain amount of money to a district if they were building. There was a cap put on. Now it's like basically, it's not really there. And it's a key issue, I think, in terms of just the idea of, you know, this was once a state. I think this is one of the points of this budget, and it's obviously something we've seen for many years. There used to be programs that helped cities and towns and school districts that don't exist anymore, were watered down.
Yeah, the building aid program was very popular.
Building aid was very important. Revenue sharing, you know, was a big deal, and it's basically, you know, it doesn't really work. It doesn't really exist. In the way it used to, and it's really another example of the state having its hands tied, and that's why I think that's why I say this is kind of a modest budget. She's trying somehow to make some inroads in these big issues such as education, K through 12, and higher education. In terms of there's little things like allowing the representatives from the Department of Resources and Economic Development, the Division of Economic Development, actually to actually go out of state to go visit trade shows, which they haven't been able to do for years. I mean, these are little things that have been cut over the years and trying to reinstate this stuff, which from the business community's perspective is a good thing. I mean, there's some things in this budget that they're not going to be very happy about. But on that level, there's certain things that are like funding for the SBDC, the Small Business Development Center. I hadn't heard those words in a government's budget address in years.
Yeah, it's interesting to get your perspective as a business reporter on that. Josh, you want to jump in?
I did think one thing that was interesting that people haven't, you know, we'll see what the implications of this are, the degree to which, you know, the governor is proposing consolidating boards and commissions, which have been a, you know, signature, if arguably archaic, part of New Hampshire's government, consolidating those. And, you know, this budget does flat fund, I think, 22 state agencies, and I couldn't tell you precisely how many state agencies there are, but most of them aren't getting more money, which, you know, again, gets back to the point that, you know, a lot of money is going to Health and Human Services, and everything else is kind of starved for that reason.
Well, let's talk about that, gentlemen. And yesterday we asked House Finance Committee Chair Neil Kirk about the budget, and he did say several times in our interview that he felt like this budget overemphasizes HHS. Let's hear what he said, and then we'll talk about it.
We cannot continue to do business as usual, which is what the governor's budget does. We've got to do something to grow our economy. We've got to redirect resources, and that will mean some pain over some period of time for many people so that all of us can benefit over the long term. There's no other way to do things in this state. It's got to be, we spend over half of our budget on health and human services, and everything else is the other half. That cannot continue if this state is going to grow.
How do you interpret that, Dean Spiliotis?
Well, you know, this has been one of the kind of big debates that we've had for some time now. Governor Haslam became governor. She said there was a lot of ground to be made up with things like mental health. We have all the other health care issues that also feed into HHS. So, you know, I think that is going to be kind of the crux of the argument over whether or not the state has a spending problem or a revenue problem.
Here's an email that came in from Marty in Dalton, who says much of the state's spending is mandated because of two lawsuits, both as a result of shortchanging Health and Human Services. Marty asks, how can further cuts to HHS even be considered as a solution? So that's sort of the other argument to what Chairman Kirk was saying. Josh?
Well, that's a good question. And having sat in some of the Finance Committee briefings during when Commissioner Nick Tumpas was briefing the Finance Committee, Chairman Kirk raised the issue of At what point might the state try to invoke the doctrine of sovereign immunity to shield itself from legal action? And, you know, that's a fraught notion potentially. But it is true that, you know, it kind of depends on what your vision of government is. People would say the most basic job of government is to take care of the people who can't take care of themselves. That's certainly the governor's view. You know, a lot of Republicans think we ought to be spending more money in areas of government that can deliver a return. And obviously, you know, one can debate what a return is, but, you know, you're not going it's hard to see making money off of Health and Human Services.
Yeah, it's fundamental tension, though, that you're describing.
And something else about the HHS budget is that it correlates with the recession we have emerged from, supposedly. And
so shouldn't it be going down, Jeff?
No, well, actually, it's a result. What we've happened is that, as Dean mentioned earlier, you know, the governor, you know, was addressing this very soberly. It wasn't like this is the great New Hampshire and economic boom times and everything. We're not in boom times. The economy is relatively healthy, but in terms of employment, it's not the same kind of employment. People don't have the same jobs. And what happens is you have people working part-time jobs or maybe in much lower-paying service jobs when people used to have better, you know, higher-paying manufacturing jobs or whatever. And they are relying on state services in some way that they never had to before.
Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Your questions and comments about the governor's budget, about some of the reaction to it. A little bit later on, we'll turn to some other stories, including a vote on concealed carry for firearms and discussion in the State House about buffer zones around abortion clinics. We'll cover those in a few minutes. Right now, though, we're still focusing on the governor's budget, and we'll take your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You know, I think it was Josh at the beginning that talked about a couple of the ways that the governor hopes to pay for some of her priorities. We talked about Keno, also cigarette taxes. Also, Jeff Feingold, to you, auto registration fees, those are slated to go back up again if Governor Hassan gets her way.
Which is an it's an interesting – this is – what Josh was mentioning before about the possibility of the governor's future campaign maybe for U.S. Senate. And this was something that strikes me is that there really are no – there's no tax increases in this. And so this fees is, you know, the old-fashioned New Hampshire way of doing things. I mean, tobacco tax is one other thing, but that's kind of like one of those things, one of those taxes where – there can be support for it because, you know, those smokers, they can just pay because they're smoking. But for the most part, there's no tax increases. And motor vehicle fees is one way. But another thing that's really interesting is without a tax increase, but she wants to tighten up restrictions on auditing companies who pay business enterprise tax. Or don't pay as much as she thinks, and it's something called reasonable compensation.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because for the uninitiated, it was very technical, but it turns out it's very important.
Yeah, because there's no income tax in New Hampshire. If you're a small business owner, you claim a lot of your profit as your income, so therefore it's not taxable. And what she wants is have the Department of Revenue Administration auditing companies saying, well, are you paying yourself a reasonable level, which is a very innocuous term.
Subjective, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you don't really kind of know what that means, and it's going to be very contentious. Let's put it that way. People have already been upset about the Department of Revenue Administration for conducting audits into what compensation should be, and I was mentioning this before. There are certain things in the budget that in the budget proposal that the business community will like. This is not one of them, and it's really like a stick in the eye of some of these people. But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Just on back on vehicle registrations, you know, this is one of those fees that governors often go after. You know, I hear governors around the country who talk about not having tax increases, but the real battle is over fee increases. So this is one of those examples of 35% increase. I think Josh mentioned Governor Lynch had trouble with this back when he was governor. It's very unpopular. It's not clear to me that the Republican legislature is going to go along with a 35% increase. But, you know, fees are where battles are fought typically. quickly between governors and state legislatures. That way you can kind of move away from the larger context of, you know, some sort of larger tax increase. So,
and this money would go into the highway fund.
Right.
So it's not for general funds.
Right.
Sure.
So there's at least that infrastructure aspect of
it. Which is something else that we've kind of neglected over the years in terms of our highway infrastructure. So, she is trying to address some of these things and, you know, using a motor. And a lot of people support that idea of fixing the roads and bridges, but they're not necessarily going to support raising the motor vehicle registration.
So one last question on all these fees. We won't call them taxes. But, Josh, and this is for you. We talked about Keno. We talked about the business compensation that Jeff described. You talked about cigarette taxes, auto registration. Which of these, if any, might fly in the Republican legislature?
Well, if you listen to the Republicans yesterday, basically they were indicating that none of them were going to fly. History would suggest that the tobacco tax is something that, might be palatable. But, you have to remember that the last time Republicans were in control, they dropped the tobacco tax. The revenue for that didn't come through and it ratcheted back up automatically. But, and this is I recall this is less than what the governor may have proposed in her. I think she proposed 30 cents before in her first term. But in any case, she's going to be arguing that we retain our competitive cross-border advantage. And, people on the other side of this are going to argue, conservatives will argue this erodes that advantage and that it's a bad thing. And, some liberals will think that this is something that is, a regressive move that, disproportionately goes after people who may not be able to afford to pay it, in that, demographic information suggests that smokers are not the most well-heeled.
But the other thing that you have to remember, this budget proposal is not being done in a vacuum. And in terms of what the Republicans are going to come up with, it'll be interesting to see, because there have been several bills that have had hearings already on cutting the business profits tax rate, on expanding credits on business. I think we've had an article about four proposals for expanding credits on the against the business profits tax, which will result in less revenue. So when you're talking about what's going to come out of the House and of the legislature, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
And whether or not this collision of priorities may allow casinos to reemerge down the line, remains to be seen. This is something that the governor certainly is interested in. This is something that Senate President Chuck Morris is certainly interested in. There's a different makeup in the Senate. Some of the Republicans that were elected replacing other Republicans may not be as game to support to casinos
They don't want to take the gamble.
Yeah, but gambling's always been a tough sell in the House, and there's no indication from the current leadership regime that they're fond of it.
So, Josh, just a political move by the governor. Don't put it in her budget, but if it comes up from the Senate, sure, she'll be supportive.
Sure, and I think that she recognizes that it didn't go well last time when she stuck the money in.
I want to ask all of you about one other huge priority for this governor that she talked about yesterday. Made a pretty strong statement, gentlemen, in support of maintaining Medicaid expansion. Let's hear what the governor said.
Allowing expansion to sunset would result in reduced savings and reduced revenues. Allowing expansion to sunset would result in increased cost shifting onto all of our people and businesses. And allowing expansion to sunset would cause significant harm to the health and financial security of the thousands of men and women receiving coverage.
So, Dean Spiliotis, just remind us, what is this sunset provision all about?
Well, this is the expansion of Medicaid contemplated by Obamacare. It's been debated in states around the country.
About
50-50. And you remember it was very difficult to get it through here. Governor Haslam called a special session in the fall. That didn't work. And then eventually they were able to agree in January on a more market-oriented version that made Republicans comfortable with signing off on it. But nonetheless, we've now had tens of thousands of people enroll in the expanded Medicaid program.
34,000, I think.
Yeah, some up over 30,000. And so the question is, Republicans put in a sunset in this, so it has to be reauthorized. I think we heard one of the Republican leaders yesterday say that they're still intent, at least in the House, on pushing for getting out of it. So the question is, what do you put in place of this now that you've gotten these 30,000 plus people on the rolls? Where are they going to get their health care from if you do away with this?
Yeah, go ahead, Josh.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this because, you know, recall when this went through, Democrats controlled the House. And so Republicans in the House, by and large, you know, they pretty much all voted against this.
Yes.
Republicans in the Senate, including, you know, the two top Republicans, President Morris and Majority Leader Bradley, you know, were crucial into getting this deal through. And they insisted on this sunset provision. The politics of this are tough for Republicans. But if the House wants this gone, I mean, this is going to require an active – something has to pass in order for the sunset not to take place.
I have a very technical question, and maybe one of you can take it on this. So we've long heard that under the Affordable Care Act, the federal government would cover all of expanded Medicaid for 3 years, then 90% after that. So is this question of whether New Hampshire will continue with this or not – is this about that 10%, that filling in that gap?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And according to the governor, that means, you know, it would be $14 million to fund that 10% through the end of 2017.
Right. And there was I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was going to say that opponents of the Medicaid expansion have argued that you can't trust the federal government,
exactly,
basically, and
say,
that they're going to say, well,
the
they say 90, but, you know, just like special
less,
education
right.
funding and all those other things they promised.
Right.
So.
Okay, so it is about that 10% and the fear that it could be more than
that. Well, and more broadly, you know, Health Human Services spending has increased and opinions, you know, there's a big difference in terms of how they view the expansion of traditional Medicaid, and there were changes made federally on eligibility that have led to higher enrollments, and, you know, a lot of Republicans believe that, you know, one reason why more people are enrolled, and these are newly eligible people, according to the state, is, you know, in part because of the publicity surrounding the expansion of Medicaid. And so the overall tab of Medicaid is going up outside of, you know, in traditional Medicaid, outside of the expansion.
And traditional Medicaid, just to clarify, is 50-50. So that's more of a cost for the state.
And also something else to remember is the effect of having this Medicaid expansion. It's, you know, first of all, hospitals and other providers are pretty happy with this because they're ending up with patients that actually can pay something as absorbing it. And that is reflected in lower premiums, supposedly, which is why organizations like the Business and Industry Association were in favor of Medicaid expansion. It'll be interesting to see what they're going to do now. They were pretty much out front on expanding Medicaid. I can't see them not supporting extending it because I think they've seen the benefits, and certainly the hospitals have.
So there'll be some pressure from the business.
Tensions between the legislature and the hospitals over the Medicaid enhancement tax law
is
another sort of ball there. So,
wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there'll be no shortage of things for us to talk about in the next 6 months, that's for sure. Coming up in just a moment, we'll cover some other top stories of the week and cover a few more stories from the budget. So stay with us. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, we're covering some of the news from the governor's budget address yesterday. And in just a moment, we will talk about some other headlines from the week, including a vote on concealed weapons permits, buffer zones around abortion clinics, and the costs of snow cleanup with more snow on the way. Jeff Feingold, Josh Rogers, and Dean Spiliotis join me in studio. And gentlemen, before we move to these other topics, Dean Spiliotis, is there anything else from the budget that jumped out at you?
Well, there's this theme in there of innovation efficiency. Governor Hassan's talked about innovation quite frequently during her time in office. And Josh alluded to this briefly earlier. You know, they have this new chief operating officer who's supposed to focus the government on efficiency. You know, for as long as I've been studying political science, chief executives have been claiming savings from reducing duplication and you know, having a new kind of systems of control in place to be more efficient. I remember Governor Lynch talking a lot about reducing duplication and consolidating offices, et cetera. Governor Hassan is continuing that tradition. You know, we'll see how much money it really saves. You know, essentially, what you're doing is creating a little bit more bureaucracy in order to try to reduce overall bureaucracy. Kind of a mixed record historically of chief executives, either the president or governors, you know, really getting a lot of money out of that.
Jeff, anything else?
I was going to mention, there was a little thing that she mentioned, which was the expansion of the Piscataqua Turning Basin in the Portsmouth Harbor.
Yeah, I had not heard about that before.
And
that was interesting.
It's an interesting thing because it's been a discussion for many years about how the Port of Portsmouth, or Port of New Hampshire, as we call it, is just – it's not it, – it, it, because of the Piscataqua River there, it's really hard to get in there, and it prevents it from really competing with neighboring ports. So this would make it easier for larger ships to come in. And potentially, when they said larger ships, you didn't mention this, but I'm thinking, well, is it possible also for maybe cruise ships to stop by? Because Portland, Maine has been pretty successful in attracting cruise ships. And I'm not sure if it would be big enough for that, but it's something that's the first thing I thought of. So this is it's a little thing, but it's something that, you know, really could make it some kind of a difference.
Yeah, it's one of those little tidbits that just kind of it runs by you. But when you think about it, it is interesting. So, Josh, what happens next with this?
Well, the budget's now in the hands of the House Finance Committee, and the extent to which they use the governor's budget as a starting point or head out in their own direction remains to be seen. But there'll be, you know, hearings and working on it for a number of weeks and then, you know, over to the Senate and see what they do. And the little deeper we go, the more accurate the revenue numbers tend to be. And, you know, we got a long ways till June 30th.
Well, and as we saw, even when the House was democratically run, they sort of looked at the governor's budget, but they crafted their own budget as well.
So, I mean, that tends to be the case.
Yeah. Well, here's an email from Brian in Jackson. He says, while I am a supporter of the governor, I cannot help but object to our state's inability to honestly talk about spending and revenue. We repeatedly talk about various ways to fund our state without actually asking ourselves to pay for what we want and need. We want to tax folks from south of the border, sin taxes, gambling. In short, we have, for my entire voting life, taken a perverse pride in getting others to pay our bills. That's kind of long been the New Hampshire way, right, Josh?
It's the liquor behind the tree. Come on.
Yeah, liquor and lottery tickets and so forth.
That's the way we do it here.
Thank you very much, Brian, for the email. A couple other stories I did want to cover with you guys. And Dean Spiliotis, a return of the issue of buffer zones around abortion clinics. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, you might remember that last year Governor Hassan signed into law a bill allowing facilities that provide abortion services to set up a 25-foot buffer as a means of protecting individuals who want to use those services or need to use those services. You know, there's arguments from the other side that this is a free speech issue. So we had this law. It was signed into law by Governor Hassan. At the same time, the U.S. Supreme Court had declared a Massachusetts law, a similar law, unconstitutional. So a U.S. District Court in New Hampshire put a hold on the buffer zone. So we don't actually have any buffer zones yet, even though we have a law in the books. So the House Judiciary Committee heard testimony on a bill to repeal the buffer law. So we have the law. It's on hold because of the unconstitutionality of the Massachusetts law. And now there's a move to repeal the law just to get it off the books. And, you know, there was some testimony from supporters of the buffer that, well, if you do this, you're going to need to come up with other protections of individuals. And then, of course, those who oppose it are making free speech arguments once again.
You know, Josh, just in general, do you think this session we're going to see a fair bit of this, you know, laws that were passed under the Democratic House and the Democratic governor, efforts to repeal those laws? Is that a theme we're going to see?
There's some. I mean, this is an issue that is people who are firm in their beliefs on this topic are going to pursue this sort of topic regardless of the political dynamic. I mean, the people who want this repeal are predominantly people who have long sought restrictions on abortion. And, you know, it is an interesting question. I don't think it's entirely clear. The proponents of our law that's, as Dean mentioned, not in effect, suggest that our law is crafted in a slightly different way than Massachusetts is and may pass constitutional muster. I don't know. But Governor Hassan is, you know, she is a big person in the abortion rights scene. She's not going to sign a repeal, I would suspect. And so we'll see where this goes.
I want to ask you about another hot button issue. Concealed carry. The state Senate voted yesterday in favor of a bill to change the permitting requirements around concealed weapons. We did a whole program on this just a couple days ago. What's driving this issue, Josh?
Well, you know, a number of things. I mean, it passed the Senate on a party line vote, which was interesting because when Republicans were in last control of the legislature, there were some expansions of Second Amendment rights, stand your ground, and a couple of other things. But the Senate was where a lot of the more aggressive bills out of the House went to die. And this time, this bill was sponsored by Majority Leader Jeb Bradley, co-sponsored by House Representative J.R. Hole, who's, you know, ardent in seeking greater Second Amendment freedom. And, you know, it passed the Senate. And, we'll see what happens in the House. It is interesting. I think New Hampshire joined four other states in allowing anybody who is not legally prohibited from carrying a weapon otherwise to carry one concealed. You know, Jeb Bradley historically has not been, you know, out front on Second Amendment issues. And, you know, it's interesting politically.
Yeah. And Rick Ganley, when he interviewed Senator Bradley, said, gee, you're not really known for coming out on gun issues. He's a supporter of the Second Amendment. But you're right, Josh, not really known for those issues, known more for electricity and other types
of subjects. And actually, I do find it interesting, as Josh said, that Senator Bradley is putting himself in this. And actually, if you tie this in with this concealed carry bill with another bill that's pretty prominent, is the reduction in the business profits tax, it makes me think, not to inject politics into this discussion, you know, far be it.
That's what we have Dean.
I think Senator Bradley, who was rumored to be a candidate last go-around but didn't do it for personal reasons, he may be setting the stage to maybe do it next time in 2016 to run for governor.
Okay, Dean, what do you think? Got to ask you that.
That's got me scratching my chin now. Yeah, I mean, it is certainly interesting to see him out in front of this issue. But, you know, these Second Amendment issues are just kind of big issues all around the country. You know, we'll see what happens with this. I don't know if Governor Hassan has said what she will do. She said she had some concerns. But perhaps there is some larger political motive behind this. Now, that's another layer that we can mix into the future governor's race.
I don't want to, you know, poison your mind there, Dean. I'm thinking about politics.
I like it. That's a good theory. It's a good theory.
Well, gentlemen, with more snow coming, and I'm not a snow hater, but we've had a lot. Jeff, some counties are being asked to tally up their cleanup costs from the last blizzard at the end of January to possibly get federal disaster assistance.
Was it the last one or was it the one before?
Or the one before.
I think it was a couple,
January,
a couple of storms ago.
The big one. The really big one.
The one that jumped 30 inches
so
or so.
How does this work?
What happens is that the state has to ask all the communities to come, how much money did you spend on this, and then they're going to basically petition the Federal Emergency Management Agency, say we want to have a disaster area declared. And then the towns are eligible for some reimbursement on the cost of the cleanup and all that. And that really actually has been a lot. There's been stories all over the place about how these towns and cities have been just hammered with their budgets and the state as well.
So they say to the feds, look, this was really bad. It was really expensive. We're a small community. We can't take care of this on our own. Yes. Can you help us out a little bit?
Yeah, it's a case where people turn to the federal government for help in New Hampshire. They don't always do that.
Well, Boston, but I would imagine,
Boston,
would be applying
sure.
too. They've
Absolutely.
Been hammered, well,
well,
right?
The biggest example we've seen in recent times is what happened in Vermont after Hurricane Irene, and that was really a horrible disaster, and they were eligible for millions and millions of dollars in cleanup. But this would be to help reimburse the cost of cleanup, and I assume maybe if some businesses were hurt, but I don't think that's the same. I think that's applying to the SBA. But the interesting thing to me was that FEMA was supposed to come last Monday to see what's going on, but they couldn't because they had delayed because of the storm on Monday, which I thought was very, I guess amusing is the right word.
Yeah, right. Well, maybe it strengthens the case anyway.
Yeah, I think it does.
So that's
good.
Well, and we'll close out on some positive news. This is from the Concord Monitor's Ian Wilson. He reports this week that for the second straight year, the New Hampshire Audubon Society's annual Bald Eagle Survey has set a new record. The Midwinter Bald Eagle Survey, so those volunteers not deterred by the snow, a one-day statewide count taken in early January, tallied 90 bald eagles. The Monitor reports this is a 34% increase over last year when volunteers counted 67 eagles. So that's a great story. I saw one this summer on the Merrimack River myself. I was just there with my kids, and all of a sudden an eagle swooped down and grabbed a fish and flew off. It was really cool.
Yeah, I saw it last summer, Eagle's Nest on Squam Lake. It's really beautiful to see. The interesting thing about that, though, from a statistical perspective, is you always wonder, you know, it's a one-day count. Are there sort of exogenous factors, the weather, the temperature, et cetera, that people are just seeing more eagles, or are they really increasing? And it sounds like Audubon is saying that while, you know, there is some potential that you're just – it's a better couple of days than maybe the year before, they still nonetheless believe that there is an upward trend, even if the exact jump is not necessarily due to growth, but just a better visibility on the days that they're counting.
The second straight year, though. So maybe –
general trend, right.
Maybe the eagle I saw on the Merrimack River – then flew up to the Squam Lakes and was the same eagle you saw.
In which case, right.
Gets counted twice.
Well,
gentlemen, next week on The Exchange, we've got a really big week. We have Governor Hassan coming in on Tuesday. So let's sit down with her, talk about some of the budget priorities that we talked about today, and also, of course, how she hopes to pay for those priorities. So I want to let folks know that that interview is happening on Tuesday. If you would like to email us your questions for the governor before the program, exchange@nhpr.org. So if you get your email in before the show, that'd be great. It's exchange@nhpr.org. We'll take your questions for Governor Hassan. You can put them on Facebook, too, if you'd like, or on Twitter. So we're getting ready for that. Also, later in the week, two top Washington Post reporters will be in the state for an event at UNH Law, and then they'll come into our studios on Thursday. So that'll be really fun. Dean Spiliotis, how about you? What are you going to be watching next week?
I'm obviously going to see what more fallout from this budget as people have had a chance to chew on a little bit. But, you know, we really are in the middle of the presidential primary at this point. I mean, candidates are just stacking up in the state in a way that we haven't seen in a while. You know, really getting down to the people deciding.
It's about a year away,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I think you're going to see a lot of official announcements probably April through June. I sat down on Tuesday with Carly Fiorina, had a chance to talk with her. It's pretty clear to me that she's going to run for president as well. She'll be the probably the only woman in the Republican field, but she seems to be full steam ahead. And people who want to hear the interview, they can go to my website and I have a link up to listen to it. But a very interesting conversation. She's raring to go, it seemed to me.
Well, so I like your image of stacking up. It reminds me of, you know, when things get backed up at the airport.
Yeah,
they're
waiting to land. And I think in mid-March we're going to have Jeb Bush and Scott Walker virtually here at the same time, which is great. For people who study this stuff,
right.
It's just going to be fascinating to watch them kind of jockey around each other.
And speaking of jockeying, Dean, here at the grassroots level, there's been some hiring.
Right.
People
Jim Merrill, a longtime Romney guy, has gone over to Marco Rubio. Rich Killian, who a lot of us know is a longtime Republican consultant, has just signed on with Jeb Bush. That's why you have to come here. Some sorting is starting to take place within the activists within the state.
Yeah,
I mean,
how about
Governor,
you, Josh?
Well,
yeah.
Governor Perry was here. It's interesting to see him return and the tone he's striking after his run last time, and
he's remarkably humble about how bad it went the first time. It really is. He's really sort of.
I mean, I'm not sure he
accepted
had a
responsibility.
Choice, but
yeah,
but
he has,
but,
to,
I mean,
not talked
he
about
has
it.
To address it. Let's put it that way.
Right. It is true that I went to his very first event in New Hampshire, and you know the crowd was very excited, and you know the degree to which having had back surgery may have affected his performance down the line, who knows? But he certainly
– You mean last time around.
Yeah, last time around. But, I mean, he certainly has been here a bunch. Rand Paul's been here a bunch. Certainly people, as Dean said, are eager to see Jeb Bush and Scott Walker, who seems to be doing well in the very early polls.
That is an interesting point because when you think about it, you just named like five or six we've named, and there's another five or six more who potentially are coming. You have Chris Christie, who's been here several times, and he has someone who's working on his campaign in New Hampshire.
Well, it's Matt Mowry, who's
from the former executive director.
So lots of activity on the Republican side.
Yes, and on the Democrat side, you could basically hear the birds chirping because there's nothing going on.
Or the Eagles.
They're waiting.
The Eagles are soaring.
Depending on who you are, you're waiting for Hillary to run or waiting for Elizabeth Warren to run, and there has been names tossed around recently from the past, like John Kerry. Apparently, they mentioned that in the Boston Press recently.
Okay, and I want to let everybody know, actually, not next week, but the week after, when Dean Spiliotis will be sitting in the chair for a couple of days. I think they're planning a show on sort of what's happening with Democrats. We spent so much time talking about
not just Hillary. It's going to be a consideration of the whole sort of Democratic agenda, electoral push, everything. Yeah, should be good.
What are you covering next week, Jeff?
Things we're going to do is we're going to be looking more closely at these suggestions that the governor has in terms of the economic development stuff because, I think those are things that really are kind of interesting. And actually, I think those are among the issues, the suggestions and proposals she has that actually could get through the Senate, through the legislature. The other thing we're going to be doing is looking more closely at energy, which is, obviously the big thing that's still huge.
Sure.
There was a big approval yesterday of the preferred transmission line down through southern New Hampshire into Boston, but also looking a little more closely at, an old chestnut called the Northern Pass. And the gas transmission line proposal, and just kind of get an idea of what exactly do these things really mean and do? What are the effects on New Hampshire?
Wow, that's great. And maybe we'll follow up with you on that because those are huge, important issues.
Absolutely.
Josh, what are you going to be working on next
week? Well, things are busy at the State House this time of year, so this and that. And, as we were saying, 2016 is already kind of upon us.
So when you're not at the State House, you'll be trailing presidential candidates.
That's the plan.
All right, Josh, thanks a lot for
being here.
That's Josh Rogers, senior political reporter for us here at NHPR. Jeff Feingold, great to see you. See you again.
Great seeing you, Laura.
Jeff Feingold, editor, New Hampshire Business Review. Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. Author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. Dean, thanks for your time.
Sure. Thanks, Laura.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. We say goodbye and thanks today to our wonderful intern, Joanna Albertson-Grove. Best of luck, Josie. You will do great, and thank you for all your hard work. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.